Welcome to Sensible Health Solutions, the show where we simplify health and wellness. Join your hosts, Haley Fields and Dr. Scott Looper, as they share practical tips and expert insight to help you navigate common ailments, nutrition, and overall well-being. Tune in for straightforward advice that empowers you to live a healthier life.
Morning, Dr. Looper.
Morning, Haley.
I have a request for a show. This has been an ongoing kind of issue. Every time my daughter gets sick, she gets an ear infection or an earache that's just super intolerable. And I think that there's a lot of parents out there who deal with that with their littles. So,
well, my heart goes out to you because earaches hurt.
Yeah.
And you just want to do something to help them because they're crying and, you know, it's misery. So, yeah, and we got a lot of sympathy. So, you want to talk about, like, how to break the cycle of keeping getting earaches?
Or just what can cause them and, how can we reduce the amount of earaches we get every time she gets sick?
Because it's... Yeah. I'm always thinking solutions is what I'm thinking all the time. Now, before we jump into the solutions part, let's talk about what they are. So, earaches are when you get an infection in your middle ear. Your ear's got this little ear cavity. There's the eardrum. There's ear canal. There's an eardrum. Then there's the space where there's some stuff in it, bones and various things to take the energy from the eardrum moving and amplify it into the cochlea. Now, it's a space. It's lined with a mucous membrane. And so what happens is you get an infection right in there, and then it causes the eardrum to bulge, and it hurts, and it aches. Things are getting stretched that shouldn't get stretched. And so it hurts like heck. Now, typically, in the past, what you do is you go to the doctor, and they put you on an antibiotic. But what they discovered was the antibiotic wasn't particularly effective. It really didn't do anything for the pain. And most of the time, these things just resolve on their own. They don't actually need any antibiotics. And then a lot of time kids would get, diarrhea or rash or something, some symptom from the antibiotic, and that the earache would have just got better on its own anyways in a couple of days. So what's happened is there's been a sea change in the use of antibiotics. Most of the time you go to the doctor now and your kid has an earache, they say to take Tylenol, tough it out, and in a couple of days you'll be better. And they're right. It's funny because that's what I was taught in medical school, was exactly that back in the 90s. And it's only been really in the last, 5, 10 years. 10 years is generous, by the way, that's actually become standard care.
So there's
thank
more
goodness.
Treatment.
Somebody's got to be the first one to do it. Anyways, my profession's good about this kind of stuff.
So there's more treatment than just Tylenol.
Yeah, tons of treatment. So here's the thing. Let's talk about what's causing these infections for real. Mm-hmm. I just told you what's causing it. But then it begs the question, why did that happen?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, this thing is inside your head. How the heck did bacteria get in there to begin with? So here's the story. What happens is something, usually a virus, causes the mucous membranes to swell up in the back of your throat. Now, the back of your throat, there's a little place where a tube that goes between the back of your throat and your middle ear exists. What happens is the opening of that tube swells up because the back of the throat gets an infection or swollen for whatever reason. There's other reasons. Allergies will do it. Viruses mostly do it, but whatever. Something causes that mucous membrane back there to swell. Now, when it swells, it pinches the tube. And so the tube's pinched. Now, nothing can go through it. Now, you blow really hard, but these are kids we're talking about. It's hard for them. Their ears just clog up. They don't know why. They just live it. And so when the ear, when the pinch happens, there's air inside your middle ear because that's what's supposed to be there. And so what happens is there's oxygen in that air. 23% of the air is oxygen, so about a quarter. And so what happens is the oxygen does what oxygen does. It absorbs into the wet mucous membrane. And that leaves a quarter vacuum. So a quarter of the space that used to be air, like oxygen part of the air, now is nothing. And so what a body does is it just naturally leaks fluid to replace the air that was absorbed. That fluid's got proteins in it, it's got cells in it, it's got a bunch of stuff in it. Basically, you just want to call that fluid soup.
Right.
Your ear fills with soup. Now, you can see it. If you're a doctor, use an otoscope, and you look in someone's ear, and then you have to tip their head this way, and the fluid line will come up the halfway on the eardrum. You can see it right there. It's not hard to see. It's like, wow, there's the fluid line. That is ripe and ready for infection. Now, there's bound to be some bacteria in your middle ear naturally because they come in with the air. They're in the air. They're little specks in the air. And so they're just happen to be sitting around. Suddenly, they're sitting in a hot tub of soup.
Boiling.
And they grow.
Right.
And then they create an infection, and then it pushes the eardrum out, and it pushes out. When that happens, it hurts. Okay? So yeah. Somehow or other, that pressure has got to get relieved to really get rid of the pain. So your body can send in white blood cells, now you got pus, and it fights off the infection and then absorbs the fluid, and then the whole thing resolves. There's a couple other ways to resolve it. One of those ways is your eardrum can pop. Now, this is usually a bloody mess, and it's also freaky as hell. Excuse my language. It's just, I'm thinking of all the past trauma I went through with all my kids, right?
Yeah.
And there's this bloody pillow, and there's all this stuff that you wonder, right? This thing, their eardrum popped, they're going to be deaf forever. No, they're not. They're not. What happens is there's an area of the eardrum that's naturally weaker, and what it does is the body knows that it needs to get this stuff out, so it thins that area. Now, it hurts when it happens. That is the pressure before that. But eventually, the pressure pops that little section, and it drains, and then that pain is instantly gone. And the kids go, and they're asleep. That's how it goes. So it's not a horrible thing. It's not a dangerous
thing. So how do you pop it?
No, you don't want to pop it. It happens of its own accord. Okay. This is nature taking its course.
Okay.
Now, Kate, now admittedly, doctors do occasionally go in and pop these things. But this is not something your average GP is going to want to do.
Okay.
You just let it run its course, whether it pops or not. I'm just letting you know, if it does pop, it's not a disaster. It's not the disaster you think. It turns out it's designed that way.
Okay.
It's designed that way by nature to pop. It drains, you feel better, and then you just resolve at that point. You've hit the crisis, and it's all coming undone. What happens is it'll heal back up. Now, there'll be a little scar there that you can see. So I'll look at people's eardrums, and I can see a scar. I go, oh, yeah, you popped your eardrums. And they go, what? Most people don't know.
No, because it happened when they were so young.
Mm-hmm. They don't remember. If you really press, you go, oh, yeah, I had that earache. It hurt so bad. Oh, it was horrible. I don't think about that because it hurt so bad, right? That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Doctors occasionally do put holes in people's eardrums as a way to let the pressure out. So if you're getting a series of these infections, one after another, once a month, you know, for months, and you get this thing, then there's a pretty easy way just to let the pressure out. What they do is they'll put a grommet. That's a lined hole. They call it a tube. You get ear tubes put in. It's not a tube. It's like a little rivet with a hole in the center of it. It doesn't look like a tube. It's just a hole is what it is. A lined hole. And you go, kick, and it puts them together and maintains the integrity of that little hole. Now, your body doesn't like those little grommets, and even though it doesn't seem possible, it sometimes just pushes them out. I've seen this. I've literally seen them in the process of getting pushed out. And, you know, bodies don't like foreign stuff in them.
No.
So eventually they tend to fall out, but in the meantime, you got this hole, maintained hole, and so any kind of infection gets in there, you never get the pain. It just comes on through. I mean, you'll get stuffy, but it'll go on through. So that's one of the things that you can do. Now, I'm not a huge fan of that. I'd rather kind of get to the core of the problem.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the core of the problem. The core of the problem is you get swelling of the mucous membranes in the back of the throat, which causes your eustachian tube to swell up, which causes a blockage of air transfer between the outside air and the inside air.
And you said which causes the eustachian tube to swell up?
Okay, so here's this. Imagine a tube.
Yep.
Okay, here's the lining of the back of the throat. The tube goes into the back of the throat.
Yep.
Okay, there's a hole here. But that swells shut.
Right.
Because it's just swollen, right? It's, you can see it. When you look, you know, in the back of someone's throat, you see a little puffy, a little pucker where that throat is. It should be smooth and flat. And just a tiny little hole, you hardly see it, just like a little slit. Instead, it's like puffy, like lips that are too big.
Oh, yeah.
And it just kind of puffs out, and it's swollen shut. Now nothing's going to go through that tube. No air will bubble through. Again, the story is, okay, now you trapped an air bubble in your ear.
Yep.
You sucked up the oxygen in that air bubble.
And there's one eustachian tube for both ears.
No. There's okay. one eustachian tube on one side.
Okay.
And one eustachian tube on the other side.
Okay.
That each ear has its own eustachian tube.
Okay.
So one of the things is if you want to actually get the eustachian tube to work better, sometimes all you need to do is just stretch it. Now, how do you stretch it? Easy enough. You get your finger wet and you put it in the back of your throat. Now, as a doctor, I'll put a glove on because I don't want to be. But as a parent, you know, you just wash your hand, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you go in and you just simply rub the back of the throat and pull it down. It's no fancy maneuver. You don't really have to even know what you hardly are doing. You just basically take your throat and you rub it down the back of your throat in the back.
Okay.
And now
on the left side and on the right side?
No, only side that hurts.
Okay.
So typically an earache just is one side. It's not both sides. Mm-hmm. I guess it could be. That'd be weird, but it happens occasionally. But most of the time it's just one side. And so you just want to relieve the pressure on that one side. So what you do is you take your finger and you simply rub it across the eustachian tube. No, rub it even near the eustachian tube. What you're doing in that case, you're simply taking the tissue and you're pulling it down gently. Just your finger running along creates a little bit of friction and just simply pulls the tissue down. And when you pull it down, you straighten that eustachian tube out and you kind of just, I don't know, stretch it. And goo that's under pressure will go bloop and come out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's simple mold mechanics. And then if you have it done to yourself, it's trippy because you can taste it.
Yeah.
You get that kind of pussy taste in your mouth. Kind of salty pussy is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then your ear it goes away. Now with kids, it's like a miracle cure because suddenly they're back to going, right? Because the pain's gone. And so that's a thing that you can do. Now, it doesn't always work. Sometimes the swelling's too much to get it to let go. Sometimes the infection's just gone on too much. And there's too much action going on in the eardrum already. And maybe they get a little bit better, but not a lot better. Also, here's the other thing. And anybody who's thinking about this is going to think, well, what's to stop them from, you know, getting like nauseous or wanting to puke from your finger in the back of their throat? Nothing. So that's a side effect of this. Somebody's finger in your throat.
Yeah, stick you get your finger down their throat, then they have that gag reflex.
You get a gag reflex, exactly. So what you got to do is be quick.
Yeah.
Because they'll get a gag reflex. And they, right? You just try to catch it before they throw up. And you just rub it down the side. And then typically they'll get that taste in the mouth and they'll feel better. The other thing to do with these things is you just want to kind of get things moist and hot. And things tend to drain better.
Yeah.
So moist heat helps more. You tell me about Addy. You're trying to figure out stuff to do. Tell me what you did to Addy.
Oh, we steamed up our bathroom for about an hour. We created an entire steam room. We put eucalyptus in her bath, eucalyptus oil. We set up a humidifier next to her bed with eucalyptus oil. Used Vicks vapor rub. She was so miserable that I unfortunately succumbed to cold medicine, so over the counter, which didn't really have any effect on her. She was
so cold medicines are antihistamines. What they do is they dry mucous membranes up,
yeah,
and reduce swelling.
She was still so stuffed up, so
yeah, it's not enough. Then yeah. once you get that infection going on in there, you know, it might be helpful enough to get it to drain on its own, but it doesn't work particularly fast. It's not particularly effective. Where you get the moist heat, there's a couple ways to do this. One is you put them in a hot tub in the bathroom.
Yep.
A lot of times that'll do it. The other thing to do is you can take a hot, wet rag and you fold it, and then you have them hold it to their ear, and then it puts some moisture in their ear itself, and it makes it more likely for things to soften. Hot, warm tissues are more elastic than cold, dry tissues.
Right.
Right? This is duh.
Yeah, obviously, yeah.
Right?
Right.
So if you're warm, you tend to stretch better than if you're cold and dry. Warm and wet is better. So you want things to stretch, and so you make warm and wet in the ear and you feel better. Sometimes you can put something in the ear that just has a natural ability to kind of soften and soothe. There's this oil that's made from the verbascum plant. It's called mullein oil. And I've used it on my kids. It was fabulous. I put a couple of drops of mullein oil in their ear, and then that'll also soften and soothe the tissues, allow things to expand, and then they tend to feel better with that. And then we'll take a wet rag and put it, have folded up, have them hold it to the ear. And then sometimes you can actually do what's called a poultice, and you take an onion and you put the onion in the ear. What the onion makes is fumes, or better yet, is scallions. I don't know if you have any scallions, but if you have scallions, they're stronger than onions. And you chop them up and fold them into the rag and hold it there. Now, you got to be careful. You let go of the rag, you get onions landing on.
Sure.
Right, you got to fold it up.
Folded.
And then let the fumes come in, and they irritate the ear. And that causes mucous membranes to weep a little bit. When they're weeping, moisture that's inside them is coming out.
Right.
And so the swelling reduces. That's the same with Vicks rub.
Okay.
So Vicks is irritating slightly. Uh-huh. That's the word, irritating. And so what it does is the mucous membranes tend to weep. Now, when they're weeping, they're taking all that junk, bacteria, viruses, dead cells, whatever, and they're just sloughing that stuff off, and there it goes. Hunks of mucus are coming out, right? Because now you get drainage.
Uh-huh.
And drainage is helpful. So eucalyptus oil is exactly the same thing. It's only the eucalyptus oil is more oily, and so it's harder to use, whereas Vicks Rub is a gel, right? Because it's an ointment, if you just a better word for it. But and so it sticks to your skin better, but it does the same thing. It irritates those mucous membranes enough to get them to drain, and then you get a reduction in swelling. The eustachian tube opens up, lets things come out, and then now the earache is gone. It's resolved. So it's helpful, instead of just talking about here's what you do, here's what you do, here's what you do, right? Well, instead of saying here's why it works, and turns out there's a lot of ways to get it to work.
Right.
What we want to do is we want to reduce swelling. How do we do that? Can you think of another way to reduce swelling? Hold on a second. Swollen tissues in the back of the throat are called the eustachian tube to get pinched shut. Now, they're full of moisture. Mm-hmm. Is there some way to draw that moisture out mechanically? Yes. What is it?
Drawing the moisture out mechanically.
Yeah. What you do is you put something near that, the mucous membrane, which literally pulls the moisture out. It's osmotic pressure. It's a thing. You've already done it. You just don't know why it worked.
No. I'm drawing
salt,
a blank.
Salt, water, gargle.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Salt, yep, water, gargle.
The salt
draws moisture out. Why does the salt water work? But salt water works... And people think, well, it's the salt water is killing the bacteria.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, no. Yes, it is. But what it's really doing is it's pulling moisture out of the tissues. Now, the bacteria are getting floated away, and boop, there they go down the sink. Also, the swelling that was in the tissue gets pulled out by having the salt water there. And that'll reduce the swelling. And again, you get a pop. Boop. Now, a pop is not necessarily the eardrum bursting, though it could be. Sometimes a pop is just that eustachian tube letting a bubble come out. You know, because there's pressure in there. It's under pressure. That's why it hurts. It's mm-hmm. it's like a bomb getting ready to explode, right? Mm-hmm. The pressure's trying to get out. That's the pain. So if you can get the pressure out through the eustachian tube, woo, now you're better. Or out through the eardrum, woo, now you're better. Right? You get the pressure out. We talked about doing the little rub on the back of the throat. That is not my go-to.
Yeah,
I talk about it because it's a thing.
That is difficult. And last time she had an earache, I did try that with not much success.
You know, they want to gag. That's the thing. They don't like it.
And I found it difficult, probably because I'm not a doctor, but just, you know, having the right, finding it in her mouth, right? Knowing her anatomy and dragging my finger along the right area.
It's not as hard as you think. It's pretty simple to do. But it's the kind of thing you need. You need somebody to really show you to get a good feel for it. The trick is the eustachian tube's in the back of your throat.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, along the side. It's not in the back.
And her mouth is just so little, so it's like, okay,
well,
let me put my big hand. So.
Okay, anyway, saltwater gargle is another way to do this, and it'll pull it out that way.
Now, something that I've been doing since I was a kid is adding a little hydrogen peroxide to my salt water.
So hydrogen peroxide is good for killing bacteria. Mm-hmm. That's just good. No, the bad side is it tastes horrible.
Yeah. I mean,
if I was a kid, I wouldn't want to use it. No. I hate hydrogen peroxide.
Yep. I only add a little bit, a couple drops. My idea is killing the bacteria. So
yeah, I would try to make it to where the kids will do it.
Right.
Because if it's a torture, if the treatment is worse than the disease, then the treatment is not good.
That's true.
That happens a lot.
It does.
Right? So, yeah.
You know. I think the most interesting thing we talked about is using onions and scallions wrapped up in a rag.
Yeah, that'll work. It also holds the moisture better, because what happens with the wet rag is it cools off in short order.
That's what I found. So I did, like, wrap a rag and put it over her sinuses, because that was what was most congested, and that was causing the earaches. So would holding an onion to the sinuses have the same effect?
Yeah, well, you don't want to do that. It's too irritating.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd hold it to the ear.
Okay.
No, could it work? Yeah, logical. It's going to irritate it, and it's going to get things to flow. But again, you know, that's your kid we're talking about. I don't want to torture him.
No, definitely not.
I'm a compassionate doctor. You know, the other thing we didn't talk about, which we need to talk about, is the eustachian tube anatomy. Mm-hmm. The eustachian tube in kids actually goes up. So where the ear is lower, and where the tube comes out in your throat is higher, so it goes downhill. So it's easy for bacteria to kind of roll downhill and get into the inner ear. Now, as an adult, your whole head gets bigger, and the whole thing tips, where the ear is now higher than the eustachian tube opening. And so now things tend to roll downhill. They tend not to roll up in your ear. So you wonder, why does my kid get this all the time?
Right, because
and why
the ear
do I
is
never
lower.
Get it? It's because of the way the tube is. If it's tipped down, stuff tends to get in the ear more,
yep,
and set up infection. If it's tipped up, then it tends not to go through the tube.
And it tends not to sit there as long.
Things drain better.
Yes.
So if you're trying to drain up, it's harder. You're trying to drain down, it's easier.
Right.
Whatever. The architecture of the tip of the eustachian tube, if the opening is higher than the ear, things tend to fall in. If the opening is lower than the ear, things tend to fall out. Yeah, falling out is better than falling in.
Uh-huh.
So there's that as well. Kids tend to grow out of this, but sometimes they don't. Sometimes they just get them over and over and over and over again. So you got to think, are they keep getting viruses over and over? The typical answer is no. What's happening is they have chronic swelling of their mucous membranes because they're having a reaction. Now, so if you're getting some kind of inflammatory reaction, then your mucous membrane is going to swell up. Now you got to think of what would cause an inflammatory reaction in someone's mouth. And usually the thing that does it, aside from infections, you know, viruses and such, is food allergies.
Mm.
So if somebody comes in with a chronic infection, some kid has chronic ear infections, then one of the first things I look at, or the first things I'll test, is whether they have food allergies or not. And most of the time they do. I'd say probably about 80% of the time, it turns out they have some sort of allergy.
She does have pollen allergy, which it's a little early for that, but...
Yeah, I doubt that has anything to do with it.
Yeah.
A little early? There's, what, 4 feet of snow on the ground right now?
It's
and the trees
spring.
Are dry twigs.
It's spring.
Yes. No pollen in the air whatsoever.
No.
Whatever old pollen used to be laying around is buried deep.
It's so
dead.
That's
not a pollen thing. The most common stuff that people react to are dairy. And you kind of know this already, because if you drink milk, it makes mucus in your mouth.
Uh-huh.
So that's mucus.
Yes.
So now that's coating and irritating, and your body has to protect yourself from the mucus. It's funny, milk is particularly irritating to people. Now, we've evolved, at least some of us, to be able to
tolerate
use
it.
Milk as an energy source. And we could do a show on that. That's a whole interesting topic. How did that happen?
Oh, we haven't done a milk show yet.
Someday. So anyways, milk has tend to be the most common thing. Which is tricky because, you know, kids like milk and they're really designed to drink milk and milk helps them to grow. And so milk turns out to be a great food.
She's not a big milk person.
Yeah.
So this
doesn't really fit your girl's case.
Yeah.
So it could be other milk products, you know, yogurt, cheese, sour cream,
ice
cream,
stuff
like that.
She's not even a cheese girl.
Yeah. So that's probably not it. The next thing that's most common is wheat.
Oh.
And then after that is kind of a mix of other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Eggs is pretty common. People have sensitivity to sugar sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Things like that. Whatever. Bunches of stuff. All kinds of weird stuff. You know, maybe other related grains, nuts, people can have a reaction to as well. But mostly it turns out to be the stuff we eat the most of. You look at the American diet, and it's wheat and dairy, wheat and dairy, wheat and dairy. Because you're having cereal with milk for breakfast, and you have a toasted cheese sandwich for lunch, and you have pizza for dinner. Yep. You're living on wheat and dairy. People do it all the time.
Yogurt.
Yeah, yogurt tends to be a better choice for dairy. A lot of times people who have a dairy sensitivity can do yogurt.
Because it's easily digestible?
Yeah, it's already pre-digested by the bacteria, and the bacteria have used up a lot of the lactose already, so the lactose is depleted in yogurt. And it's one of the reasons why it's sour, because it lost its sugar.
Mm,
the sugars went away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also been, you know, pre-digested to some extent, and it just turns out to be a better product, you know, a dairy product. Dairy's been modified so that we can digest it more easily. That's what the dealio with yogurt is. Again, I'm tempted to do this whole show on dairy products. Okay, let me just do a little teeny bit. It turns out that if you live in a place where there's a lot of grass, you're going to be hungry because you can't eat grass.
Uh-huh.
Right? Grass is not digestible for humans. At least the seeds are, but not the grass itself. Now, if you got an animal that eats grass and converts that grass into milk you got a chance with.
Oh.
So what they did in the steppes, this is areas of the giant grasslands, is they milked their animals. What they were doing is milking horses. They started with horses. Cows came later, goats came later, but horses is what started with. And they couldn't drink the milk because it would give them a stomach ache. So what they would do is they would let it ferment and turn into this alcoholic milk drink. And they would drink that. That was like a major part of their diet. These are the Mongols, by the way. In the Asian steppes,
mm-hmm.
and that's where the ability to be able to process milk first came. Now, not everybody could do it. It was an individual to individual trick, and the ones that could manage milk tended to do better. They were healthier. They were better fed. They had more kids, and eventually they took over. There was just a genetic adaptation that allowed them to do this. Now, the Mongolian hordes and Huns and such, you know, rode hard into Europe. Raped and pillaged and all that stuff, and left a lot of kids.
Uh-huh.
And so it turns out Central Europe, the population is pretty good about digesting milk.
Okay.
Now, other places that didn't happen, and those populations are very bad at digesting milk. So Africa, for example, to this day resists. Most Africans can't drink milk. They can't do dairy products. Dairy products are not a healthy food for them. They don't do well with them. It gives them a stomach ache.
Mm.
And whereas, you know, your average European, particularly, you know, German or Eastern European, they handle milk much better. Not all.
Not all.
There's still some that don't, but the percentage chance of someone in Europe is going to be able to handle milk is much improved because of the interactions, I'm using a mild word, that their ancestors had with the Central Asian hordes. You know, it's funny how things work out.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people.
Right.
Those are my ancestors.
Right.
I do great on milk. I mean, not milk, but dairy products. Dairy products are a health food for
my
me.
My ancestors are Sicilian. Whatever they're doing down there,
yeah.
They probably are eating milk. I would assume they were
a lot
eating
of mixing
milk.
And mingling. It was a long time ago, so
right.
People tend to move around, right, like that.
So we talked a lot about bacterial infections causing all the mucus buildup. What about swimming? Is that still a bacteria story? When water gets stuck in the ear?
Yeah, same thing.
Okay.
So we're talking this time. The whole conversation has been, it's funny you mentioned this because I never did use this word, and I should have. It's called otitis media, which means the middle ear infection.
Yes.
Otitis is ear inflammation of the middle area, otitis media. Now, otitis externa is ear infection of the outer area, and that's your ear canal.
Okay.
So your ear canal is separated from your middle ear, your outer ear from your middle ear, by this membrane. It's called your eardrum or tympanic membrane. So if it's on the outside and you get an infection out there in your ear canal, that's otitis externa, and that can be caused by some kind of fluid. We're back to the soup, by the way, getting trapped behind your earwax and then sets up this little soupy thing, and then you get an infection out of that. Or whatever, some kind of, you know, sometimes infections just kind of get into the skin and just set it up there. Now, your external ear is particularly resistant to this kind of infection because it's got this nasty coating that's, you know, mildly toxic to other creatures called earwax. The reason why we make earwax because it gives us protection in
right,
our ear.
Right, it keeps things out.
Yeah. And also, if things get in, they can't set up shop because it's not very tasty. Very few organisms can live on earwax. Earwax is not...
it's disgusting.
Not a tasty thing.
Well, I think, Dr. Looper, that's about all we have time for today.
Okay, good. I think we covered the subject pretty good. My heart goes out to your little girl. She's going to be better in a couple of days. So if you steam her and you have her gargle in salt water... And maybe you try to reduce the pressure in your ear by doing that little finger thing, maybe, or whatever means. And then in the meantime, you give her something to kill the pain. And the best thing to kill the pain for kids is Tylenol.
Yeah, she's
so you
on
give her
Tylenol
right
now.
Yeah, and that helps a lot. That really does. Tylenol is a freaking miracle. It's a wonderful thing to be able to use.
It makes me feel so guilty using it.
No, don't feel guilty. Here's the thing. You don't need to live on Tylenol. If you're living on Tylenol, you got a problem. You got to fix it. But if you're doing Tylenol occasionally because you got an earache, that turns out to be a great thing.
Wonderful.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Dr. Looper.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Sensible Health Solutions. We hope you found today's discussion enlightening and packed with practical tips to enhance your wellness journey. Remember, small changes can lead to big results. If you enjoyed the episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback helps us bring you the best content possible. Stay connected with us on social media for more health insights and updates. You can find us at Sensible Health Solutions across all social platforms. Until next time, stay sensible and stay healthy. This content is for informational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Seek medical advice from a healthcare professional for any medical conditions.